The Boldly Now Show. Burning desire. Big ideas. Bold action.
Welcome back to another segment of Boldly Now. And we have the astonishing privilege and pleasure to be with one of the foremost voices of this particular time in reality shaping right now, to spend with Dr. Zach Bush. He is, to put bluntly, one of the most important people that you need to be listening to right now about the reality of the situation that we're all experiencing, and give us some keen insights into what's happening right now, and possibly what could be some of our greatest opportunities that lead us into our next step of this collective reality shaping together. Dr. Zach, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. What an exciting time to be part of this whole Earth event. It's awesome.
Amazing. So I just want to ask you, what's on your leading edge? What's most alive for you right now that you'd like to share with this group of people?
Well, we are at the most extraordinary of events in our collective lives. I've talked to 80, 90-year-old patients in recent weeks, and I've talked to, you know, kids, and everybody seems to agree they've never seen anything like this. And so we're having an event that didn't even happen with World War II or, you know, Vietnam or any of the other big socioeconomic disruptors of depressions and recessions in the past. We literally put the whole globe on pause button. And from a medical science standpoint, there was not any early signs that that was necessary. There was, early signs that this was going to be a bad flu season kind of effect. And in fact, we've lost, fortunately, far fewer people by magnitudes of, you know, hundreds of thousands than we thought we were going to lose. And so it wasn't for a scientific discovery of threat, but it was really, you know, a pandemic of fear that was created, I think, out of a necessity. I think the world needed to pause, and we did. And something that's been told to be impossible for, you know, over 150 years is you can't put progress on hold. You can't put the consumer industry on hold. You can't put technology and transportation on hold. Oh, yes, we can. And we just did. And even if it was for erroneous reasons, and even if there's, you know, malicious people behind this, or it just doesn't matter really, in that we just proved that the world can take a pause and give Mother Earth a break. And when we do, she responds instantly with more vigorous life, more return of beauty, a reminder of what our priorities are right now. And so I think we are just in a precious moment as humanity. And there is no doubt that we are losing lives, as we do every year. We've lost some 200,000 people to syndromes surrounding this COVID virus. I've done a lot of work over the last few years to educate people on the microbiome and viruses so they wouldn't fear microbiome ever again. It didn't work. We went ahead and feared this thing. And so I don't fear the virus. I don't think people are dying from a virus. I think people are dying from complications of toxicity around the microbiome. And the microbiome, when it's stressed, puts out virus. And the virus is an update. It's a literal adaptation of cellular mechanisms in the microbiome, as well as in mammals like ourselves. And so we have a genomic update that is the result of physiologic and massive global stress. And that is leading to this precious moment of pause. And I hope that we take out of this time together a multi-generational lesson that we can put the consumptive mechanism of human society on pause immediately. And there's not the same consequences that we thought. People have lost jobs, there's no question. People are diving into deep debt, there is no question. But so few people actually died. In fact, it looks like mortality rates are going down right now, not up, in the last couple of weeks. So like the world is getting healthier. The world itself is getting healthier, and those of us thriving on it may be thriving better for it as well. And so I hope that in these coming weeks, when the government says, okay, it's all over, the threat's over, and you can go back to normal, I hope we don't go back to the normal they're expecting. I hope we don't go back to buying more stuff and more handbags and more carpets and more Target plastic stuff. But I hope we go back to an environment where when we find out we can gather in large groups again, we do it with a whole new heightened sense of gratitude and blessing and being able to congregate together in fellowship. And no better, resource than music to bring people together. So I can't wait for it to see our music festivals take off to celebrate life in the way that they are capable of. And so I hope that we go back to a much different world. And if we don't, our future is very short and grim as a human species and as a biology on the planet as we know it. We're in our sixth great extinction at our own hands, and we have an opportunity to change that. And the last few 8 weeks has really proven we can change overnight. And let's build jobs that don't increase the consumption of Mother Earth. Let's build jobs that would co-create with her. Let's build more jobs that build parks and cities and recreation environments outdoors, and start to redesign houses and schools and hospitals to reintegrate nature into them. Let's build those jobs instead of going back to our old jobs. So I think we're at the pinnacle. We're at a tipping point in human history. Never has there been such an opportunity to transform.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And one of the pieces that you mentioned and what I heard you say is that we have an opportunity to have a healthier planet, a healthier experience. And hopefully in this time of isolation, we truly understand the benefit of multi-layered diversities that maybe we have kept ourselves away from. And as we come back into a reconnection, we remember the multi-threads that are available to us that we can connect to, and not just a sterile stream of information or experience that maybe we've been inundated with up until this point, which in some ways, as you've said previously, have created the symptomatic repercussions of the situation that we're currently finding ourselves in.
That's absolutely right. There's so much lessons to be learned by the microbiome, the biology beneath our feet and in the air we breathe. There's the microbiome, the living entities being the archaea, the bacteria, the protozoa, the fungi, spectacular universe, in and around us, the 1.5 quadrillion bacteria within our bodies. And we now know that that's not just in the colon, it's in every organ system. The brain has a microbiome, the liver has a microbiome. And so we are these organic gardens. And what we can learn from nature is that she creates resilience and life through biodiversity, period. And when you take away biodiversity, you create a monoculture of life, the whole planet collapses. And it's for a reset event. And we've seen that happen 5 times in history. And every time there's been a great extinction on the planet, wiping out anywhere from 85 to 97% of life on Earth, every time that happens, life responds with even greater force and greater bioactivity, greater biodiversity, greater intelligence on the other side of that cataclysmic event of extinction. And so if we are headed for a human extinction, we should also go into that wide open, even if it becomes inevitable that we didn't change fast enough. We poisoned the planet to the point of its own demise for the sixth time. If that happens, and we go into that with the spirit of, we are going to expand on the other side of death. We are going to expand as an energy force. 7 billion souls are going to go into the universe with a new knowledge of our experience, of the mistakes that we made in separating one another. And we've been doing that since kindergarten, and we've been doing it since the beginning of time, which is, when humans get together, we like to find differences and then fight over those differences. And it's a bizarre behavior. And there's an opportunity for us to change that. And if we could fundamentally change that simple thing of trying to find our differences to define us by, and start instead defining each other by all that we have in similar. We have 20,000 genes in common with every other mammal. I don't care if it's a bat or, your monkey or your dog, you've got 20,000 genes in common with that animal. And humans only have 20,000 genes. And so we're literally just a rearrangement of the same genes to create any mammal. And you quickly find out that, if we could see that for all of its similarities, we would never destroy an acre of Amazonian jungle to justify growing 3 species of corn and soybean and alfalfa or something. We would see that for a generative acre of hundreds of thousands of species of life in the form of plants, and another 100,000 species of life in the form of animals, insects, and the rest. And so when we see life as singular as it is, we're going to behave so differently. And I think the generation that's coming up right now has got that attitude. I think there's an attitude of so sick of hearing about political differences. I don't care if it's Fox News, CNN. I don't want to hear about it. I am so sick of hearing, American news tell us that Chinese news is lying to us. When did we start trusting American news? You know, it's like we this generation, I think, has a really appropriate jaundiced eye towards the status quo and the media machine. I think this generation is ready for a real revolution. And it doesn't have to be a violent one. I think it's a revolution of philosophy. And that revolution of philosophy would change far more than any other war could ever do.
Absolutely. And you mentioned extinction and you mentioned revolution. And perhaps the way to avoid the mass extinction and truly embody the revolution is to acknowledge in a very practical way the bioevolution that is actually, in fact, bringing us into this precipice together, right? There's something very unique happening in the DNA and the RNA strands right now that are being affected by our environments right now. And perhaps in a very honest way, we should look at this from a Darwinian scientific level of selection, of opportunity, and of proportions that we don't even know how to comprehend, the level of availability to our evolutionary potential that is catching up to many of our conscious evolution potential that we are having by choosing to go more organic, by choosing to go more green, and by choosing to say yes to more of a life stream as opposed to the toxicities of days before.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, I think that as we look into, that Darwinian process, he was scratching the surface of our potential in that he was looking at nuclear DNA of the bird or, the Galapagos lizards, and he was mapping changes in the DNA of the animal themselves. And it turns out that our real plasticity, that we can change our biology in an instant, really, is not coming from the genes of the human or the lizard or the bird. It's actually coming from the extreme flexibility and horizontal transfer of genetic information between bacteria, fungi, and via the viruses into the animals. And so when you change an environment or you create an environmental stressor, the microbes are going to find an instantaneous pathway around that. By sheer number and by sheer trial and error, they're going to find a biologic solution. So whether that's new nuclear radiation or 5G cell phone towers or chemical farming or over antibiotics in a child or a vaccine, any of these things that shift our natural environment are going to demand immediately an opposite and adaptive reaction from the microbiome. And excitingly, the microbiome passes that right into our genes. And so a bacteria can pass information right into humans even without a virus. And so we have this constant, back and forth of adaptation that's so much more, exponentially faster than Darwin could have ever dreamed, because he thought that we were dealing with this very, high level DNA demand of mom, gives child DNA and blah, blah, blah. We now know that's hardly true. The DNA you get from your parents can build 4 million different bodies and with the plasticity of that genome. And so the body you have today is not from mom and dad, it's from the collective intelligence of your entire environment. And if you change your environment for the worse, your body's gonna have to adapt and find paths around that. The human body doesn't adapt nearly as fast as the microbiology does. And so when we say we're gonna put on masks and hide from every germ on the planet, well, that's our death sentence. If you are not willing to take in the speed of genetic reordering and reorganization of the genome of the microbes around us, you're dead. You can't adapt fast enough as a single human organism. You don't change quick enough. But a generation of bacteria is a single day. And so they're passing on new genomic information during that single day. And as soon as they pass away, leaving genomic markers of progress behind. So we've got to recognize that the true capacity for transformation and release of the old biology is through our embracing of the microbiome. And it's very important for us to understand that, you know, this, that viruses aren't even living forces. They're not like bacteria and fungi and the like. They actually have so little genetic information in a virus that they are incapable of hurting a human. There's no HIV virus or anything else that's ever hurt us. It instead causes, it's there because of a shift of our relationship with the environment. And if we can't deal with it, it's because despite its effort to help us adapt, our genome is still failing. Our biology is still failing in a milieu of toxins that we breathe, that we eat, that we drink, that we absorb through our skin and our makeups and our sunscreens and everything else. It's just like we have created a chemical industry that is our consumer product industry. And we should be wondrous that we are alive at all, that we've survived to the point we have, is a miracle of adaptation. As we start to fear viruses and we start to push away, we lose our own genomic future. 50% of the human genome was made by viruses. We know that 50% of our genes ended up integrated into mammals through viral transfection. 10% of our genes were actually inserted by retroviruses like HIV. And so if not for the viruses and their intelligent transfer of genomic information from a vast microecosystem, we would have never developed. If we separate ourselves from that natural lineage, that natural capacity, we will die. And again, is death an endpoint? No, we will expand again, but not in the body. And when I see a kid running down a path in the middle of a field of wildflowers, I think we want to play a little longer. I think we should stay and play and start to become co-creators instead of consumers of the nature that we know and have in such bounty. And so it's going to be that shift in behavior away from consumption towards co-creation that will really define our next generation. And so we have about 8 to 10 years to fundamentally change agriculture and in the energy sectors before we really, you know, tip into the catastrophic speed of you know, collapse of the oceans and everything else. So that's exciting because all of you showed up right this second. You showed up right here, 7.5 billion souls showed up right now to be part of the greatest experiment of humankind. In 200,000 years, our very, very brief history on a 4-billion-year-old planet, this little smidgen of time that we've taken up comes to this moment. You know, we're in that overtime, we're way past fourth quarter. We're in the third overtime. We knew 40 years ago that our behavior was unsustainable and killing the planet. It's accelerating every time. And so we are now in the fourth overtime or something like that. And it's the score is stacked against us. So we're going to have a Hail Mary to make it out of this one. But I believe we could do that in a split instant if we change that mindset to transform a consumptive and behavior, a belief in scarcity to a true belief and understanding of abundance that Mother Earth creates for all of her children. And so that's very exciting that you all showed up right now. And it's very exciting that we're all able to connect over platforms like this that haven't existed before to tie us all together. And something cool happens when you get microbiome talking together. When your microbiome connects at a large enough population and diversity, you get something called quorum sensing, which is a hyper-intelligent behavior of microbes. And I believe we can do the same. If we can get enough people reaching and stretching through music, through dance, through science, through entrepreneurial, you know, innovation, through to, you know, social structures and parties and dissolution of walls and fences and a reimagining of our terrains where we don't own stuff, we participate in it. We participate in the lands that we would take care of. And instead of buying places, we should sign up to take care of a place, you know? And so if this is your acre, that's your acre to steward into the future. It's not the one you own so that you can consume it in any fashion you want and pile up trash or whatever you're doing. You need to see ownership as a co-creative process. And we need to start breaking down those walls that have, you know, forced us to build empires, to extract more and more from developing peoples and enslavement on all kinds of different levels. And so through freedom, we're going to find biodiversity. Biodiversity is going to be our path to freedom.
Absolutely, 100%. And it's just, it's such an amazing invitation for us to recognize that that we really do become a product of our environments. And so to take very clear, accurate, honest accounting of what we have put into our environments up to this point, what we have put into our bodies up into this point, into our awareness up into this point, and make a very real, honest, reflective choice going forward that we can keep going in that direction, or we can make a very conscious shift out of that direction and into something that brings a little bit more life into the situation at hand. A friend of mine, Magdalena Satori, she had an amazing insight where she said, you know, it's not about whole systems redesign. It's about reintegrating back into the system that has been here since the beginning of time. And may this time of isolation that we're all experiencing really recognize the invitation of what that could actually mean for us to have, as you said, all of the existing particles of the life that makes up our being be connected to all of life that makes up the being of nature again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that beautiful classic saying, you know, we have been fighting wars over gods we cannot see, not realizing that the nature right before us is the face of that god. You know, we've been destroying the nature in the name of unseen gods or something like that. And so we need to realize exactly as you're saying, is that the physical gift of being in a life right now is an interesting it's an interesting moment of translation, if you will. There's always been consciousness in the universe. It really is the force that shapes the very scant amount of physical structure within that universe. We're 99.999% vacuum space as a human body or as an oak tree. We are vacuum space, and it's the intelligence of the consciousness that arranges those molecules, and the consciousness is a vibration. We can measure it in a cubic centimeter of vacuum space. You can measure the electromagnetic field, and the density of that electromagnetic field is staggering. It's more dense than anything else ever measured, and more dense than all the physical amount of the universe put into that same cubic centimeter. It's just this astronomically, massively powerful, dense structure is vacuum space with the electromagnetic field vibrating in it. And so consciousness is literally that which forms the form of that little particle state that we are. And so when you've been gifted a life, consciousness has arranged you for a moment in a physical structure. And certainly in my patients that die in the ICUs or in their homes, they will often be, you know, at that veil for hours or days where they can step across the veil, and they're talking to elders and, you know, ancient, you know, relatives, and they're talking to their children, and they're back and forth across that veil. And they always tell of the beauty of the other side. They always say, so it's clear that we are going back into consciousness as soon as we let go of the physical body. We're going back into the vibration of the universe, not to give up our identity. We seem to very much hold our identity within that vacuum by having our own unique vibration. And so know that in this moment of being human, you are a unique vibration that's, I think, been present and active since the beginning of time, that is now gifted with a physical moment where you're translating a long-term chronology of consciousness, and you're translating that into a physical moment. And that physical moment is new. Every millionth of a second, you have to rebuild the entire body with the rearrangement at the atomic level. And so you are new now, you're 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 new now. And yet you tend to drag into that next new moment all of your previous beliefs and thoughts and insecurities and doubts, and that shapes that next moment. And so that's why we look like we're so stagnant, is because we keep bringing the previous programming into the new moments that are happening so fast that it defies the human mind's capacity. If you will release for a moment, you will build yourself a new body. You will build yourself a new connection to consciousness. And consciousness is not something you have to go to school for. Consciousness has existed since the beginning of time. It's something you tap into, not something you learn. And so we need you to let go of all of your previous programming. You've got to let go of the news right now. It is programming with age-old fear. It's programming us with warlike mentality. We have to kill all of nature so that it doesn't kill us.
this is a malignant and dark, dark message that is inundating humankind today. And I see humankind rising differently. Humankind shaking that off and being like, I don't think so. I don't think this virus has got our number at all. I think this is pretty cool. We're all, you know, rearranging our priorities. We're all like starting to think about how do we take care of ourselves and connect on a different level. We're also thinking about what are civil liberties, and maybe we can't take them for granted. And what does a revolution of mindset look like? How do we change so much so fast that the government has no mind control over us? That's not something they can inflict on us. Our mind is our own. We are tapped into consciousness. There is no government between you and consciousness. Tap into your intuition. Tap into your knowingness that you are a free spirit. You are capable of making very deep decisions about your medical and health, you know, rights and your ethos at your core of who you are and who you want to become and what you're going to become is going to define that future that we could step into. And we have to let go of everything. We have to let go of our previous conceptions of its impossibility. Oh, it's impossible to change, you know, global warming because the oil companies will never shut down transportation. They shut down transportation. Yeah, so whatever we think is impossible is only that, you know, remains that if we keep telling ourselves that. So we have to believe in these next few years that it is even hard to change, you know, a $17 trillion American economy. We can do that in a split second. As consumers, we control the whole thing. You know, government controls that. That's us. That's the consumer mind. That's the consumer behavior that will change it. And so when we say, I'm not going to buy the extra thing, I'm not going to buy the extra, you know, frozen food thing, I'm going to buy the package of seeds and I'm going to plant a freaking garden and I'm going to have so much food next year, I'm going to have to give it away because I can't eat it all. That's what I want to do. That's what I want. I want to get to know my farmer and I want to sit on weekends, you know, get out of my freaking cubicle, get off my freaking Facebook page and go and help a farmer. And I want to be out there in the field and I want to feel what it feels like to have soil between my fingers and toes again. I want to know what it feels like to bite into a cucumber that's hot off the vine or bite into a tomato that's got somehow maintains a cold center in the middle of summer. How does it know how to do that? Mother Nature is waiting for us to engage. And if we do, we're going to have a different world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I'm thinking about, as I'm hearing this amazing poetry that you're just sharing right now, of this visceral connection back to life, I'm thinking of people's disconnection to life itself, but also the disassociative relationship that people have with death itself, which is having people make decisions that aren't as bold as you have just previously stated, but rather finding ways to in some way retreat into a smaller version of what the machine would like to have them behave as. And so I just want to touch on this piece and note that through the other side of that is a reconnection back into the revelation of humanity itself.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that comes in the concept of death, right? And so at the same pace that we've been so aggressively trying to sterilize ourselves over the last 100 years from microbes, we've been trying to sterilize ourselves from death. And so we've taken death, which was a normal part of households really through all of history. And then we created ICUs and big hospitals and morgues and a whole system of sweeping death away so quickly that you never get to witness it. Sweeping it behind, you know, closed glass doors of an ICU where you can't even touch your loved one unless you're wearing a latex gloves and a mask. And this has been the reality for generations now. And we have forgotten the beauty of that second birth that we call death. It sounds like an endpoint because our psyche has been trained wrong. Death is an expansion. It's this extraordinary rebirth. And we did humanity a massive disservice by disconnecting from it, by trying to sterilize that. And so I would highly encourage everybody to be a part of the second birth experience. If you have an elder or a friend or a family member that's going through, you know, hospitalization right now, do whatever you can to be a part of that. And, you know, I know there's weird, silly hospital regulations going on right now as if there's some sort of biohazard around patients, which isn't the case at all, but it's, you know, really sad that we have so put the fear into the hearts of man in the recent weeks that not even nurses and doctors are being in the room when these patients are dying. That's never happened before in my lifetime. We've always sat at the side of our patients' beds when they're dying, whether it be a nurse or a hospice doctor or whoever it is. Like we are eager to be at that moment because it's so beautiful. You say, how can we treat it like that? Well, look what we're doing on the other end of the spectrum. We're trying to sterilize birth. And so we sweep children out of the womb. 51% of births in China are now by C-section. You know, it's like we're sweeping, you know, kids into the world through these sterile incisions in women's abdomen instead of letting them come through the organic garden to be seeded with the microbiome that would support their life for the next 100 years. Like, we forgot that whole piece and we sterilized birth. And now we enter the world with no bacteria and fungi to support our, you know, new relationship to the world and, you know, support what will become our immune system and everything else. And we're born sterile and lonely and isolated. No wonder kids are now on antidepressants. We have whole pediatric seminars now on how to start children under the age of 2 on antidepressants. That should be illegal. Like, it's just amazing how fast human psyche and human biology is collapsing right out of the womb as we continue to birth more and more sterile children generation to generation. You're born to C-section maybe, and then you give birth to a second generation of C-section, then a third generation of C-section. Pretty soon it's 3-5 generations before anybody has seen a vaginal canal. What does that mean for a species? That means we go extinct. And so that's, you know, terrifying when as a human species, we decide we need to sterilize the birth and death process and somehow take nature out of it. It will be to our demise and it's easy to fix. A home birth is most extraordinary experience. When my son was born at home 22 years ago, I thought I knew something about medicine. I was, you know, all fancy. I had birthed babies in the Philippines and all of this. And I was in med school and, you know, I thought I was just a badass. And then that thing happened in my home. And I just couldn't even believe that nobody had ever explained a miracle to me. Like, it's not like something amazing happens. It's literally something that has to rearrange every molecule of your psyche because nothing makes sense anymore compared to what just happened. And now you have to think on a whole different level. If it's possible for a woman to bring some, you know, ancient soul into the planet through her womb, what are we capable of? What are we here to do if that can happen? And so I just honor every mother out there. You are a portal of light force energy, and that child coming through you is an ancient star, a vibration of light energy that's echoing through time and consciousness and now being slammed into the opportunity to be in a physical vibrational state of a human body to look out into the world with that curiosity and that sense of wonder that my son looked up into my face with. And I suddenly felt like I was like 0 years old, and I felt like this thing I was looking into was eons old, and I was looking to the deepest wisdom I had ever seen, and it was just my son. And then I watched him grow up to realize, man, the world is really powerful at deprogramming, reprogramming. So a lot about being a parent is fight it off, push it back, let the miracle keep unfolding, let that ancient soul express itself into its full potential. And that's where we'll be so different. And so in 3 generations, we will have children that are vibrating to an ancient consciousness, not a TV station.
What I felt as you explained that miracle is the miracle that we all get to have in this particular time frame right now, to be the mother of our own home birth of our new self.
Beautiful, beautiful. That's the call to action.
Truly. And make sure
there's a lot of microbiome involved. Get out and roll in the dirt.
Please get dirty. Please get creative. Please get messy with your thoughts and with your actions and with your deeds so that we can remember what it's like to create the art of life again. Dr. Zach Bush, thank you so much for being with us today. It has been an absolute honor to share your wisdom with this community, and I look forward to hearing more from you going forward, and just thank you for all of the intense care that you've taken to gain the wisdom that you have and your profound courage to share it with the world in the way that you do.
It's my deep pleasure to be with all of you. Blessings on all of you. Can't wait to see the home births happen.
The Boldly Now Show, igniting the world of burning desire, big ideas, and bold action. Be sure to download Boldly You in the App Store, Google Play, or online at bold.ly/YOU. Boldly You is an app and learning platform igniting your burning desire, big ideas, and bold action, generating a future for a thriving humanity.